We're about to talk to Neil Slade, musical composer, seasoned concert performer, author, artist. His music has been heard by millions in the PBS documentary movie soundtrack for Still, and a music for Kodak United States Traveling Expedition. He's given hundreds of concerts, radio, television performances, including appearances at such venues as the United States Air Force Academy and the Gerald Ford Amphitheater. Slade was assistant to Brain and Behavior Research, TDA Lingual, and that's where we've met the last time Neil was here, talking about his brain and clicking the oblongata. I already forgot. He's going to chastise me. And he has a DVD out now that not only did he with sound before, now he's tickling your brain through your eyes. The DVD is called Mirror. Mirror, you can go to his website at neilslade.com, or you can go Mind Mirror, I believe it is. And I want to welcome and return to Neil Slade. Thank you, Neil, for being here.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Receiver's here. There we go. By the way, just go to mirrormovie.com.
Mirrormovie, there we go.
Mirrormovie.com, just like it sounds, and you can stream, like, there's four big clips that you can watch, and you can get a real good sense of what the movie is going on there.
And it is a visual trip. You tickled our ears, and now we're tickling our eyes.
Yeah, it's a very different kind of movie. I haven't seen a movie like this before. The first 20 minutes is a fun documentary, and then the next hour is the story, and then the last 5 minutes is the mammal brain adventure, the Urfi and the Chloe show. And so it's kind of like a Neapolitan ice cream.
Yeah.
You get all these different flavors, and there's like 5 hours that I put on the DVD. So like there's I'm not trying to sound like a commercial here, but I just want to let people
know. Well, yeah, that's one of the, I mean, we were here to talk about you and what you are, but in focusing, I want to hear about the mirror. I want people to hear about it so they know it's pretty cool.
We spent about 3 years on it. There's a audiobook portion called Mirror, and that was a short story that I wrote about 20 years ago before the pop fad of kids doing magic, you know, via Harry Potter. Well, I wrote about a kid doing magic 20 years ago, and in this story, and it really illustrates very important concepts about the human brain. This is a young girl who fixes broken things, and she transforms junk and garbage into beautiful objects, which she helps people with. And she does this with her brain. She does it specifically with the frontal lobes part of her brain and clicking this magic amygdala switch. And these are real parts of your brain. And what they really do is they really do fix things, and they really do help people. And so she illustrates it in this story called Mirror, which makes up the story in the DVD. And then the DVD also talks about my history with brain and behavior researcher T.D. Lingo, and how I got interested in brain and behavior research and some of our first kind of wild mass brain focus experiments that we did over on Art's Bell Show on Coast to Coast. And so there's a whole potpourri of, there's a whole mess of stuff. It's a smorgasbord of brain adventure, and that's why I finally came up with An Amazing Brain Adventure as the overall title for it.
Because you were talking about the brain, and you talk about it in a very physical sense, but a lot of the concepts that you have in working with this brain would kind of go into the higher spiritual sense. Is there a overlapping, an interface between the two?
Yeah, and that's what Lingo did. T.D. Lingo was a fellow who came out of World War II, and he went into brain science, and he taught in the public schools, and he was getting his behavioral degree at the University of Chicago, and it was just going too slow for him, so he dropped out at the last minute of his PhD program, and he decided to set up his own brain research lab, and he ran that for 35 years. But it wasn't like a white sterile laboratory. It was a bunch of log cabins at 10,000 feet in the woods in Colorado. And so every summer he would have this Brain and Nature course. Would people from all over the country would come up, and they'd spend 6 weeks in tents and lean-tos, and they would study all the latest neurology journal reports, and they'd study the anatomy texts, and they would really go into depth into the latest findings in brain and behavior research. And then they did all the self-therapy and, you know, whatever was current at the time. And what he found was that there was this overlap that you were talking about between a standard neurology and what at the time people were describing as metaphysical types of experiences, you know, and into the paranormal. And as they learned about the physiology of the brain, and as they got rid of all the defensive junk that they would typically carry around with them in the city, they would find all this paranormal stuff would start to occur just spontaneously. So Lingo said about trying to, you know, link up the two. What part of the brain, what type of processes might lead to these extrasensory and ultra-normal types of experience?
And I had a listener correct me. You clicking your amygdala?
Amygdala.
Amygdala. So you didn't have the accent.
Some people say amygdala. Some people say amygdala. You know, if you say tomato, I say tomato.
Well, as long as they don't say Dalai Lama, I guess. Right, yeah. Now, that really fascinated me when you were here. We did this, and I really felt that charge. In fact, I'm going to go in and pull that little piece out and see if I could use it in my daily or semi-daily meditations. And is that an example of physically bridging that higher and lower?
Well, you know, people talk about the third eye a lot in spirituality and in meditation and yoga, right? I mean, that comes up all the third eye and the crown chakra. Well, it just so happens that the third eye is in the middle of your forehead, right?
Right.
That's where you see it. Lingo, and, you know, and really any brain researcher will tell you that the most advanced part of your brain is your frontal lobes, the part that's right above your eyebrows. And when you understand what the frontal lobes do in terms of brain process, you come to the understanding that all of the processes that lead to spiritual awakening as defined by the mystics and yogis and so on, this is directly linked to frontal lobes processes. And what Lingo found and what I've found over and over and over again over, you know, the 20 years that I've been into this is the more you turn on specific frontal lobes processes, which is defined by neuroscience, the more you have this kind of mystical experience happen to you. Now, Lingo came up with a name. You do, you know, there is this peak experience that people have. And all religions have it, and all, Kensho, Moksha, Nirvana, Enlightenment. I mean, you know, it's this kind of peak experience where you feel like you're one with the universe, okay? Everybody knows what I'm talking about, I'm pretty sure. And at the brain lab, after people did all their therapies and studied the brain, a good percentage of the people had this peak experience without doing any kind of traditional meditation, but it was because they came to an understanding of their brain and they triggered this phenomenon. So he called it frontal lobes transcendence. And you can have this kind of experience, and it doesn't matter what religion you are, it doesn't matter if you're an atheist for that matter. So that was a very, you know, interesting link that he made observe myself on a personal level, but I've seen it in all the people that have kind of understood, this brain self-control concept.
Now, I'm going to go out and take a wild guess that you've probably been looking into doing this clicking in a visual sense. If you can switch on to the frontal lobes by doing this mirror movie, by doing visuals and stimulations that way, I'm sure you can do an equivalent or a different or another level using your visuals.
Well, okay. What you have to understand is that peak experience, this transcendence phenomenon that we're talking about, there's what is it? All roads lead to Rome, or there's more than one way to skin a cat. You know, it's not dependent on any specific technique. That's what's very interesting about it. And first of all, let me say there's two things people tend to get confused about when we talk about brain self-control. One is this peak experience, which I use the term popping your frontal lobes or big brain bang, okay? Popping your frontal lobes. Then there's this other thing that we call clicking your amygdala forward. Those are two very distinct things. The amygdala is like a master click switch in the middle of your brain, and you've got one for your left hemisphere and one for your right hemisphere. And people can go online to my website and just go to brainradar.com, and you'll see where is my amygdala in the list of things on the index page. So go to that page, and you'll actually see pictures of this amygdala organ. And there, we even have some movies that you can watch to show you where the amygdala is. So you got one in the left hemisphere and one in the right hemisphere. And what it does is it's responsible for one basic thing. Actually, a couple of basic things. But one thing it's known for is to instantly turn on reptilian reaction, fight or flight, counterattack types of reactive behaviors. So that is if you're walking down the street and you see a reptile at your feet, you can automatically react to that and protect yourself. You know, fight or flight. It helps you to instantly survive in situations where you're threatened. When that happens, your amygdala clicks backwards and it cranks up your reptilian reactive brain, okay? But your cortex, the more advanced part of your brain, your frontal lobes, can also overcome the limitations of reptilian reaction. Sometimes it's good to have that instant reaction, but a lot of times it's not, and it's not in your best interest just to react. It's in your best interest to think about what's happening and to compute better solutions to your problems. Now, when your cortex overcomes reptilian brain limitations, we call that clicking your amygdala forward. And that allows more activity to occur in the most advanced parts of your brain, in your frontal lobes. So, if you click your amygdala backward, you've turned on fight or flight, counterattack behaviors. If you click your amygdala forward, you turn on the most intelligent, advanced problem-solving parts of your frontal lobes. So that's clicking your amygdala forward, clicking your amygdala backwards. Now, if you do this, if you consciously click forward over a long period of time, you actually change the way in that your brain is wired. You accumulate new experience. You accumulate new ways of problem solving. All those changes in your brain accumulate, and at one point, you finally have this big breakthrough. Okay, you have a big breakthrough of a problem, typically, and that is the transcendent peak experience. So, you do a lot of clicking forward, which is just something you do throughout the day. It's easy. Sometimes you have a subtle response. Sometimes you have a bigger response. But that's just a daily thing you do minute to minute, clicking forward. You know, you do it whenever you think of it. That accumulates in one day. You have a big brain bang. You pop your frontal lobes. So, those are those two key terms that I thought it was important to really define for your listeners. And it's something that people mix up a lot of the time.
Okay, well, that's very good. And I've noticed where I've grown from, say, if I look back a couple years ago or several years ago, where I would have a what I would call gut reaction, which I guess would be the reptilian part.
No, I'll let you go on, then I'll have a comment about that.
Okay. Well, it's like you want to, like, lash out at somebody. You want to take an aggressive action or a flight action.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely your reptile brain at work. Dr. Paul McLean calls that the R-complex, and he also called it the reptile brain. So that's that sort of violent, reactive thing, okay?
And then as time would go on, there would be this, you have the reaction, but then you have this, like, moment where you have this decision to make. There's a reaction, but then you can get to a point where you have a space of time where you could choose, right, do I really want to go to a...
Yeah.
And in that area...
That's your frontal lobe starting to kick in.
Yeah, and I think that once you get that little space of time and you start to use that other one, it seemed to get more natural.
Yes. you make frontal lobes processes a habit. And that's where you're actually, I mean, you can look at a person's brain and brain scans, or they've done this with mice, you know, you can actually, you grow physical new neural connections in your brain. And that's why I said it accumulates. The more you click forward, you accumulate brain power. And eventually, you know, what you do is you figure out how you solve your problem. And you find yourself less and less having to click, you know, less and less are you clicking backwards into reptile brain, because you don't put yourself in those situations where you are clicking backwards. So it's kind of a double benefit. But one, you said something very important. You said you had this gut reaction.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know that they have a second brain in their body. We don't have one brain. We have two. Have you ever heard that?
No. This is like, oh?
This is, yeah, oh, you have two brains? Well, you do have a second brain, and it's called the enteric brain. And what it is a bundle of neurons equivalent in number to the neurons that you have in your skull. And it surrounds your intestines. It's in your gut. Okay?
No kidding.
Yeah.
I've been around a block a few times. I've never heard this.
Well, and you know, it's people who are on medication for things like for mental disturbances, very often those cause trouble in the digestive system and in the gut. And it's because those chemicals are working on the brain, but they're also working on this entire enteric nervous system in the stomach as well. So, you know, it's now believed that the whole idea of butterflies in your stomach and having a gut feeling, right? It's literally true to a certain extent. Now I think I probably mentioned this on, I don't know if it was on your show or another show, but you know, many, many years ago, decades ago, Carlos Castaneda wrote about his teacher, where he learned the medicine man, Don Juan, told him that he needed to learn how to connect with the universe through his gut, through his solar plexus. So, you know, this is what the yogis call this, what chakra is this? This is the, it's the chakra that's in the middle of your abdomen.
I've heard the term solar plexus, but I've never put that all, it just dawned on me. I've never sat down and actually put it all together.
Yeah, well, it's a center of a different kind of intelligence, of a nonverbal intelligence, of a feeling type of intelligence. And again, like I said, you've got as many neurons in that part of your body as you do in your cranium, and that's what's the second brain, the enteric brain.
Now, how really active is it in making, like, decisions or reactions or, you know?
I would guess that depends upon the individual. You know, some people always go on gut reactions, okay? A lot of people are very, mental. So yeah, I think that's a very individual kind of thing. But if you know that you've got two different ways of interpreting and connecting with the universe, through gut intelligence or through head mental intelligence, I mean, then you've got two tools to work with instead of just one. You know, people tend to think, you know, well, if you use your brain, it's a noisy thing, that you've got all this chatter going on all the time. But the thing is, most of the tissue in your brain is devoted to nonverbal types of functions and processes. You have two areas on the left side of your brain, Broca's area and Wernicke's area, and they're pretty much responsible for verbal communication and language. But other than that, the rest of your brain has very little to do with verbal talk and things like that.
Right, hold on there. I'll put that finger in that book, and we'll come right back and continue talking with Neil Slade about the brain live, and we'll be right back. We're back talking about Neil Slade and neilslade.com. Mirror Mind, or is it Mind Mirror?
Mirror Movie.
Mirror Movie.
The story in the movie is, the story segment is called Mirror. So
okay.
Mirror Movie will take you to that thing. People can also go to brainradar.com. That's a lot easier to spell than Neil Slade. Most everyone knows how to spell Brain Radar. And, you know, we've got a bookstore there, and you can get online downloadable books and music, and or you can get hard copies and stuff. So we make it pretty easy for people to get stuff. But even if you don't buy anything and you go to the website, I've been working on this website for 7-8 years now, and it's so big that if I want to find something on my own website, I often have to do a Google search. I swear to God, I'm not making it up. Didn't I once write an article and then I have to Google it? No, okay, there's one.
Yeah. So, actually, I was referred to, what brought you back to my mind was we were talking about whether or not people could use higher spiritual type stuff for evil.
Yeah.
And somebody sent me an article you wrote thinking that by the process of doing that, they would actually do it to themselves and kind of burn themselves up or something.
Yeah, that was my feeling. You know, I know there are people who try to use magic. You know, they try to do negative magic and hexes and voodoo and things like that. But first of all, what I've read about voodoo being used in a negative context was that is dependent that the person who is having the negative voodoo done on them, and by voodoo I mean any kind of negative kind of energy, they have to know about it. It's not like, you know, shooting somebody in the back. If it's a mental process by which you're trying to have an effect on someone's life, if it's a negative effect, they've got to know about it. That's one thing. The other thing is that if you're tapping into metaphysical types of energies, if you believe in that sort of thing, and I do, but if you're tapping into those types of things, you're a very sensitive, you should be a very sensitive type of person. And you would also know of the law of karma, or for that matter, Newton's law, which is for every action there is an opposite and equal reaction. Most people agree that that's a true law of nature. Well, if that's true, if you're sending negative energy to someone, even if it's on a mental level, you know, you're going to experience that as well. If you're sending someone bad telepathic powers, well, you're going to be on the receiving end of that too. So I think it's very unlikely that someone would use these sort of mystical energies to have harm on someone, because essentially the universe is a mirror and it's all going to be reflected back to you. So that's why I stated in my article why negative ESP doesn't work. It's mostly not because it won't work, but it's because you're going to be sensitive to it, and it's all going to come back to you.
Some of the things your answer may be redundant, but where I'm coming from, to me, might be different than some of the questions. And I want to find out how the brain relates to things like ESP or remote viewing, or doing readings, or tarot cards. Is the brain just simply conveying things, or is it involved in any of that?
Oh, I think it's definitely involved in putting energy out. It's just not a receiver. It's also a transmitter. And now, in terms of the physical universe, it's what controls how we change physical energy. So if you are into the subject matter of paranormal, it would also receive and transmit as well. Now, in terms of some people question, and I think it's a legitimate question, whether or not there is such a thing as ESP or paranormal abilities, my feeling is that these are really just extensions of natural normal abilities of the brain. For example, the frontal lobes, the most advanced part of our brain, computes things like cause and effect, and logic, and concepts of time. Okay? So what is that? What does that allow us to do? Well, we can predict that, for example, here, I've got a penny in my hand right now. Using my frontal lobes' ability of abstract imagery, I can predict that if I let go of this penny that I am suspending 5 feet above the floor, if I move my fingers apart, that penny will drop to the floor. I'm actually predicting the future here based on my memory, based on logic, based on cause and effect, right? So I predict that this penny, which you will hear in a moment, will hit the floor and make a ding. Okay, ready? Here we go.
Here we go.
Hear that?
Yep.
So I just predicted the future. I want everyone to take note.
Okay. Now we can add seer to your list.
Yeah, that's right. Now, take that one step further then, okay? You know, perhaps the ability to predict things, you know, on the next level is really just an extension of that frontal lobe's type of behavior. For example, if I flip the coin, I can predict that it's going to land heads, okay? And I can take a survey of how many times I'm going to be right. And then I can decide whether or not I actually have this ability to predict something of which I do not apparently have any control over. What I've observed and what was observed at the brain lab, and if you kind of study the area of paranormal, you'll find that the less people are clicked backwards into their reptile brain, and the more people are clicked forward into frontal lobes processes, the more you have these occurrences of the paranormal and the ultra-normal type of experience. There's a logical connection. When you're clicked into reptile brain, you're clicked into fear. You're clicked into boredom. You're clicked into negative feedback. You're stuck in the here and now. And as long as you're stuck in the here and now, you don't have this tendency to look what's happening in far down the timeline. Reptiles, for example, they can't see cause and effect. They're not social. In other words, they don't interact with creatures around them except for sex. Okay? They don't nurture their young. They're not concerned with anything but the present. And when a human is spending a lot of his time calculating and using reptilian brain processes, that's going to be your universe. It's a very limiting universe that doesn't go very far out from you. But if you're interested in telepathy, well, that means you have to be concerned with people outside of yourself, which is just the opposite of reptilian brain processes. If you're interested in precognition or what is going to happen in the future, well, that's just the opposite of being in a reptilian state of mind when you're only concerned about, you know, what's sitting on that rock next to you or at that very moment. So just a little bit of common sense, you'll understand that frontal lobes types of processes are really just a step removed from all of these paranormal processes of telekinesis and telepathy and ESP and clairvoyance and clairaudience. It's just a logical extension of our more advanced frontal lobes types of thinking.
What about using something like that to, say, get lottery numbers and become rich and then just bury yourself in reptilian stuff?
Well, there's two ways I thought about this. Number one, I used to know a woman who worked in a health center in California, and they were nonprofit, and they didn't make a lot of money, and they were faced with how are we going to get some more money to keep the center open. Well, one of the people at the center would say, "Okay, I'll go and I'm going to go play. I'm going to go to Las Vegas, and I believe it was." This place was in California, and I'll go win some money, or I'll go buy a lottery ticket. And sure enough, when the center needed some money, this person would go out, and they would just gamble, and they'd come back with pockets full of money. And then the center would continue to operate. Okay? But the center itself helped people. It was a healing center. So the motivation for gambling and winning money was not egocentric. It wasn't selfish. It was really just so that they continue to help people. Now, most people, when they say, okay, I'm gonna predict the future and I'm gonna predict what the winning lotto numbers are, dollars to donuts, the great majority of these people are not thinking, well, and then I'm gonna use that money to feed the hungry in Africa.
Right?
They're just thinking, me, me, me. Well, me is reptilian. Okay? As long as all you're doing is thinking about yourself, as long as all you're being is greedy, okay, as opposed to just having what you need, as long as what you're doing is just, you know, grabbing, ego grab, you know, suck energy, that's going to turn off your ability for precognition, because that's an advanced frontal lobes process. Are you following?
Oh yeah, no, it's beautiful logic.
Yeah, so that's how it works. Now I have tried. I thought, okay, I'm going to put my mind to it, and I'm going to predict some winning lotto numbers. Never been able to do it. I have had precognitive dreams where I woke up from sleeping, and it said, and it told me, you know, it was a dream that I won a bunch of money at a casino up in Black Hawk, Colorado. So that day I would drive to Black Hawk, and I would win a little bit of money. I wouldn't win a lot, but I won something. But as far as, you know, anyone that I know trying to use ESP to win at the lotto, I think we probably would hear a lot of people claiming that they could do that. The other thing that someone mentioned to me also was, if someone was dumb enough to mention that they won the lotto by using their ESP, they would probably have way too many people knocking at their door the next day. So that's maybe why you don't hear people claiming that they won the lotto with their powers of paranormal ability.
I think we got...
Still there?
Oh, there we go. Okay.
I don't know was that your phone? That was my phone.
I don't know. They went quiet, so I'm guessing.
They went quiet. I think I had a bad connection to my phone, so now I've fixed it. So okay. We're okay.
There we go. You used your brain to...
I had another phone within 2 feet reach.
That's pretty good.
So fortunately, I have a spare phone here.
So, along those same lines, so that if somebody is going, and then, see, this reminds me of some of the spiritual teachings, like Jesus said, you can't get thorns of fruit from a thorn bush, and you cannot get fruit from a thorn, thorns from a fruit bush. I mean, he was very specific that there is no way that evil can be good and so on. And then this is actually giving somewhat of a physical and metaphysical example of this.
Well, I'm glad I agree with that philosophy, because that's what I said. If you know, you can't use these paranormal abilities for evil purposes. That's just another way of saying the same thing. So it's
fear.
I've never heard that saying before.
Fear is going to be used for control. Again, this is the lizard brain and so forth.
Yeah. We could talk all night about just that alone. Believe me, especially these days with you know, the war on terrorism, fear is used to manipulate the population as a whole.
And with that fear, though, it's always going to be, like, there's a war on terrorism. They're throwing bombs or guns or what have you. They're not doing any kind of, they're not like, well, I guess I'd forgive the simplicity, but loving the enemy, so to speak. They're just throwing bigger rocks at them. There's no higher thinking process of trying to solve it. It's just, make a bigger fear thing. Make a bigger gun, a bigger weapon. Kill bigger, faster, harder.
Yeah.
And if you keep in that mentality, you're never going to solve the problem.
Oh, absolutely not. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, using the reptilian brain to... Listen, you can solve problems with reptilian brain thinking, but they're always short-term solutions, and they never take into account the big picture. Now, the difference between, again, the reptilian brain and the frontal lobes is frontal lobes understands cause and effect. It understands concepts of time. It is capable of much more complex problem solving than the reptile brain. So here's a good example. you go, you decide you're going to go for a hike up in the mountains, okay? One person is going to use their frontal lobes and one person is going to use nothing but their reptile brain. The reptilian brain person gets right on the trail and starts hiking up the mountain, okay? The frontal lobes person sees the ranger station and says, you know, I'll catch up to you. I'm going to go in and see what kind of information they have here. So the frontal lobes person goes into the ranger station, and there's some brochures there, and he starts reading, and he looks at maps, right? Maps of the park. And he sees a brochure of what to do if you encounter a mountain lion. So he reads through, and he anticipates what would happen if he saw a mountain lion. And the instructions say, raise your hands above your head, make lots of noise, wave, and don't run away, and you'll survive, okay? So he folds up the brochure, and then he goes up on the trail. I hear some music. Are you going to need to take a commercial break there?
Yeah, I do, but we'll stop there, I guess, if it's going to be longer. Okay, all right. So remember where we left off, because I have a habit of forgetting.
We'll get to the frontal lobes mountain lion and reptile bear mountain lion story. After.
Okay. All right. Neil Slade is here talking about brain fun, I guess. I guess that's the next domain he can get to add to his list. We will be back live to continue talking. We'll open the phones up for the next hour if you have questions for Neil, as well as getting some more tidbits about brainisms. Not aneurysms, but isms. We'll be back.